You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
While you were skipping stones, building forts, and flying kites, I was missing school and all my Saturday nights. Other kids were climbing trees and rolling down hills. I was singing songs to pay my family's bills. Little me, growing up Broadway. Little me.
My guest today is a Broadway child superstar turned full-on adult, nonstop Broadway mainstay, having appeared in the Broadway cast of Carousel, Hello Dolly, Cats, On the Town, Newsies, Bye Bye Birdie, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and The Boy from Oz. He's part of the upcoming West Side Story film, and many of our listeners may have seen him on season 8 of So You Think You Can Dance. Please welcome my buddy, Jess Loprato. Hi, Jess.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
That's like the baby bio, because your bio is very long. You have been working in this business pretty much nonstop since what age?
Since 11.
Okay, so that's pretty good. Let's go back to the beginning. You're from New Jersey. Tell me what were you doing around the house that made your parents be like, let's get this boy in a tap class? Like, what was going on?
Well, my start was very much like Mike from A Chorus Line. My sister, who's 3 years older than me, she started dancing first, and then I would always tag along with my parents to go pick her up or drop her off to class, and then we would just stay. Sometimes we would catch like the tail end of a class. There was even moments to where I would get on my stomach and look through the crack of the door to see what they were doing because the door was closed. And they did think at one point, because I have an older brother, and my older brother, they tried to do that with him, try to see like if they could get him in dance class. And he was like, no.
No, thanks. No.
But when they saw me have some sort of like an interest, they were like, yeah. Let's give it a try.
How old were you when you first started taking dance classes?
Three. I was three.
And were you the only boy?
No. There was, there were two of us. There were two boys in my class.
Oh my God, I love that. Normally you see those pictures that people post and it's like one boy in a tuxedo and like 100 girls around.
Well, that did happen, but it was two of us. It was always us with like the cummerbund and like the tie. It was, yeah. I think my first time dancing at my studio that I grew up training at was their annual spring recital. And it was Don't Let Your Boys Grow Up to Be Cowboys. And there's a picture of me just crying. I think because I was three, I was such a baby. And my sister's next to me. It was like a duo picture with the two of us. And I'm just like in puddles, just like.
Were you crying because you were like so happy or you were so stressed?
Well, I mean, like I was a baby, so it didn't take much for me to cry about something. But when I actually did that performance, there's video footage too. I didn't really do any of the dance. I liked being on stage, but I didn't really do any of the dance. There was someone dressed up as Woody the Cowboy off to the side, and the whole number, there's video just me waving. Just me waving the whole time.
I need to see this video. We have to post it on our Instagram. Okay, so when would you start getting good? Because you're the best dancer I've ever seen on Broadway, which we'll talk about in a minute. And I tell you that every time I see you, because legitimately, I cannot take my eyes off you when you're in a show. You're so much better than everybody. So before we hit it, when did you start getting good at it?
Oh, well, I mean, when I was probably around 10, I think that's when I really kind of got, you know, the interest to see more than just, you know, dancing on stage. I knew there was a world that I could probably fit into as far as, you know, my performance, because I was definitely a personality as a kid. And with my dance training and performing, I think when I was around 10 or 11 is when I was like, you know what, let me see what I can really do with this. So that was when auditioning went really skyrocketing, just to kind of see what I could be available, just be interested in, you know, just to see if there was musical theater shows like regionally, Broadway, off Broadway.
So, did your parents find you an agent, or were you going to open calls? Tell me about how that started.
Right away with open calls for sure. Backstage, one of them, absolutely. And then not long after that, I had my first agent. And actually, I was supposed to do the tour. I booked the tour of Beauty and the Beast. I was supposed to play Chip.
Right.
But I was, at the time, I think I was 8 or 9. So that was definitely a little too young to go on the road. I mean, like, we were just, at that time, we were just auditioning just to audition, just be like, let's just see. This is just the experience of it all. So, but then not until I was 10 that I did my first professional gig, which was in Nashville in the Radio City Christmas Spectacular.
Oh my God, how fun was that?
It was a blast. It's like Nashville at that time, during that time of the year, during Christmas time, is just beautiful. And to perform at the Grand Ole Opry was just unbelievable. I didn't really know at the, because I was so young, but my dad, who came down with me for that time, was just enamored, just like taken back by just all like the wonderful history of the Grand Ole Opry. It was a blast. And then
and
my
kind of a perfect job to start, because it's not like 10 years. It's like 3 months of your life. Yeah,
exactly. And like I've done already a couple holiday shows to where that's just a great schedule in and of itself, where you just commit for 3.5-4 months during the best time of the year. It's great. I loved it. So that was one really that I was like, I want to see what I can do more with this. And I know that I have something. Just want to know when I can really, you know, showcase it more and more. Because at the beginning, you know, because children tracks and all that stuff and shows was very, you know, adorable and such. But when I got into high school was when I really kind of had more of like the interest and the drive to kind of see where my technique as a dancer and as a performer on stage could carry me.
Let's talk about your first Broadway show. So you booked a vacation swing role in Boy from Oz, starring Hugh Jackman, dreamy Hugh Jackman. How did you get that job? Who do you remember telling you you booked it? Tell me about the beginning of that.
Yes. So originally I thought that they were looking for, because it was Peter Allen, it was a story about Peter Allen. So the agent that I had at the time steered me just differently, saying, you know, they're looking for blondes. So I was like, okay. But then I cut to, I watched the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and Mitchell David Federin, who played young Peter Allen, is doing his big show-stopping number in the first act, When I Get My Name in Lights, in the middle of Herald Square. And I'm like, he's not blonde. Okay.
Like, this is mine.
This is mine. So, but then I eventually went in for a vacation swing. And I just went in, and actually my friend Nicole Valens was a part of the casting.
Happened her casting then.
Yes.
I mean, she's still the best, she's not dead, but she was such a great casting director in New York for a long time.
Amazing. And at the time I didn't, I mean, like, no, she put two and two together. Well, I put two and two together afterwards, many, many years later, when Nicole said, I cast you in Boy from Oz. I'm like, really? Wow. So she was behind the table throughout that whole little small window of time, but they needed to find someone to commit for 2 weeks in the middle of the run, because it only ran for a year. I came in, I think the audition must have been in, maybe around January, like at the start of the new year. This was 2004. The show opened October 2003, and I was 11 years old. And I was just, I couldn't believe it that I was getting this opportunity to go in to really showcase what I can really, really do. And then I got the call. I think I was at home. It was probably later on in the evening. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was going to make my Broadway debut. Whether or not I made it onto the stage or not, I was going to be in a Broadway theater, you know, and really be a part of, you know, the community.
What was your family's reaction to that? Because I always think that's such a cool thing. You know, like when you, especially if you have a sister who danced, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was that? Like,
I mean, like, they just couldn't believe it. They knew that the work really, really paid off, because we really were just hustling for the longest time. I even, going back to when I booked Beauty and the Beast, my grandfather, who had just watched my father and I go to auditions back and forth between the city, going through the tunnel back and forth, when he heard about Beauty and the Beast, he was like, I can't believe they actually did it. We were just reminiscing about it not that long ago. We're like, wow, yeah, he was just like completely just in awe, just like, wow. So when that really happened for Boy from Oz, it was really a dream come true. And then we just jumped right into rehearsal. I think I had like maybe 2 weeks of rehearsal. And then I was on standby for 2 weeks in the middle of February. This was around Valentine's Day. Huh. And just being a part of that show, it was kind of like the hubbub. It was like the hot spot for a lot of people to go to because of Hugh's, you know, recognition.
Was like a very hot ticket.
A very hot ticket. And like people were just like, they couldn't get enough of him. They couldn't get enough of the show. And I met a lot of great people along the way. And I remember Bobby Wilson, who was our child, well, Wrangler's not really the name that they say anymore, child Wrangler.
What do they say now?
And then they say child, I don't know. It's something different. It's a little bit more.
Comment below if you know what it is.
The etiquette is a little different. Right. Look at the terminology. But I just remember like his spot where we would hang out was downstairs in the basement, and we had couches, we had a TV. We watched all the like fun little things while the show was going on, just staying in our own like little nook. It was hilarious.
So you never got to officially go on for Young Peter Allen, correct?
I got to go on one time.
Awesome. Tell me about that.
One time. This was my second stint in the show. So I did it in February, and then I did it again in August. And they were kind enough to grant me one show. And on top of that, I mean, like just getting one show is crazy.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, they granted my family and friends 40 tickets.
Stop it.
Yeah. So that was just like, just crazy. I still have pictures from all of them at the stage door afterwards, just like, and like with Hugh Jackman, it was amazing. But the best moment of the whole night was at the very, very end. So at the end of the show, there's this huge spiral piano staircase that
I remember it very well.
You remember, right? Like it's all the way up, and like it's just like it's an amazing view. And like I had never been on that staircase until that night.
Oh my God. And then you had like run down it.
Oh yeah. It was just like,
Coming to Daddy Warbucks at the end.
Yeah. We just did like, you know, just, it was like maracas and stuff like that too. And it was fun because there was like a little dance phrase that Joey McNeely, the choreographer, made, for Young Peter Allen before like the song proper. So that was fun doing that. Like doing second turns on Broadway stage was hilarious. I loved it.
Tell me about Hugh Jackman, cause he's the greatest. Like I'm so obsessed. So,
Hugh was the best, and at the very end of the show, this shows you how much of a generous person, individual that he really, really is. At the very end of the show, curtain call goes as planned, as choreographed. Curtain comes down, and then he gestures to whoever is operating the curtain to hoist it back up one more time. And I was standing right next to him during the bows. And he just pushed me as the curtain went up. He pushed me forward to give me one more final bow. Give me the last bow of the night.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's the best feeling in the world. And I mean, that moment stands with, you know, still, you know, resonates so well with me. And just the generosity, like, not just him, but the other people who I've worked with who are, you know, headliners and such. I saw it again when I was in Hello, Dolly! With a lot of the understudies who got to go on. They always got the final bow. Bette Midler was always generous with her time with all those people, you know, who were understudying, who were nervous, who were shaking in their boots. And then, like, they had that final bow. Like, that just shows you the generosity and the true value that these headliners like Hugh really, really had.
Also like this old school theater spirit, you know, where they're taking care of the company and it's not about them. And that's a really amazing thing. And it was very clear that everyone in that building was in love with Hugh Jackman and that he took care of everyone. Yeah.
When you have someone like that who sets the tone and the mood of a run, not just for the show, like for the audience, but the show, like really for everything and the atmosphere backstage too. Like when you have someone who really, really cares and really shows the best for everyone else as a representative of the whole show, like that is the best feeling, because then it's just like, you know, you're on cloud nine once you step foot in that stage door. It's just amazing.
Well, he'll be saving Broadway next year, so we can't wait for that. Are you in Music Man?
No.
I don't believe it. I'll believe it when I don't see you. All right. So the next Broadway show you book is The Grinch, which you do for 2 years, two back-to-back years. But that was the original cast, like the first year at the Hilton or whatever it was called then.
Yes.
Is it the Ford Theater still? What was it called then?
No, remember? It was the Hilton. It was
okay,
the Hilton.
All right. What's it called now?
It's called the Lyric.
Okay, great. I've lost track of that theater. It's like the American Express, Broadway. Okay, so you do Grinch for 2 years. Now you're an original cast with a bunch of kids. Obviously, Boy from Oz was just you and whoever the other kid was. Right. Tell me about doing Grinch and what that experience was like for you.
Well, that was great because that was the first show that I got to do with a bunch of other kids. There were 24 kids total in that show, but they sliced it in half so that only 12. They just kind of cut it into two, so two groups of 12. I was a part of the original company, and there was like a red cast and a white cast, and that's how they just kind of divvied it up. And it was fun because we got to be a part of my cast got to be on an opening night. Which was really a blast. And, you know, that show was just quirky and fun and all the holiday things that go with it, too. It was amazing. Just wearing all these amazing, outrageous, you know, exaggerated costumes that you look like a who. I had like hair extensions and things to clip on to my hair. I had to go to makeup and put like blush on my cheeks to make me look like a who. It was just like, what is this? This is so unique in itself.
And so how hard is it to do something like that is on Broadway and for 4 months or whatever, and then just go back to regular school and try to be a normal kid again? Yeah. I feel like that transition is very difficult.
It can be abrupt at times. For a holiday show, it's kind of set in stone because we know that it's only going to be a limited run. I mean, it's bittersweet when the week of New Year's comes up and you know that the show is going to close because that's the end of the holiday season. But I mean, like, going back into middle school and then, well, I did the Grinch my eighth grade year and my freshman year. So that was fun just to have those weeknights to be like, I'm going to go, I'm a student by day. And then
I'm going to do my Broadway show tonight.
I'm gonna do my Broadway show at night.
how did kids in school kind of deal with that? Were they cool about it? Were like, tell me about that dynamic.
Yeah. I think some people just, I think I was just kind of like a mystery for a lot of people. Yeah. I was like, you know, just kind of like, they didn't really understand it. I mean, a lot of people who are, you know, a lot of students, a lot of kids who I grew up with were not in theater per se, whatever, in any capacity. So they just couldn't understand it. I think, when I was in middle school, I did one school musical. It was Singing in the Rain. I was Don Lockwood.
Duh.
and I remember... It was around that time too. I mean, like this kind of goes into a little bit of bullying that happened at times, but bullying was just a loose term, but this is the one of the only few times where it was really, really serious. And this is dating me because it's 2006 and MySpace was like the hot thing before like anything else came up. And someone created a fake account on me. And it was bad. And it was bad because like it was obviously false accusations and things like that were just not... that were just not true. And, you know, I kind of, you know, thankfully had a little bit of thick skin. I mean, maybe I internalized it a little bit, but not as much as probably like my parents, because they just couldn't believe it. I was just kind of like just confused of the whole thing.
Wild jealousy that comes out from kids when they see a kid having any kind of experience that feels elevated.
Right.
And certainly, you know, watching a kid leave school on Wednesday mornings or whatever it is,
right,
can really fire up some real anger.
I mean, it can. And yeah. This goes to show the credit. I had to give credit to Mr. Mead, who was my principal at the time. And he really took good care of me during that particular moment in my life. And he really was just a mensch. He was just like amazing, amazing person to, you know, talk to, see how he can handle things. And he did it in the most professional and classiest way. I'm indebted to him, really.
And you're still auditioning for everything and anything that's coming up during these freshman, sophomore year?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, like during my freshman and sophomore year, I was going in for a lot of things. And everything kind of changed a little bit once I got into junior year. Because that's when I was able to drive. And I was also able to go commute because my house is 10 minutes away from like the local bus station. And that bus station can take you into the city. So once I got my car, I could just go because when I was in Bye Bye Birdie, I got my license. So I was able to go to, you know, park my car, go into the city.
So weird.
So wait, what year was Bye Bye Birdie? Your senior or junior in high school?
No, I was a junior in high school. That was 2000. That was 2009. We started rehearsals in the summer of 2009 and went until January of 2010.
Okay. So tell me about booking Bye Bye Birdie, which probably felt like a very exciting thing, because now you're not like a little, like you're a legit teenager. You're driving. There's no work for you all on Broadway. And here's this big group right after 13, right?
Yes. And yeah. I tried out for 13 and I made it really, really close, but I didn't get it.
Sorry.
And I was bummed. I was really, really bummed. But it was also the first time that I was really doing a proper 8-show week schedule, because the other things that I had done, Boy from Oz was not a consistent 8-show week schedule. Grinch was certainly not, because it was a holiday schedule. So this is the first time that I was doing a real 8-show week schedule. So that was fun. I originally didn't book Bye Bye Birdie. I originally didn't book it. But then someone backed out. And then here's the best part. I was at the orthodontist on the day that my mom got a phone call from my agent, Nancy Carson at the time. And yeah, so she wasn't in the waiting room. My dad was with me at the orthodontist. I was getting my braces tightened of some sort. I don't know. It was hilarious. And yeah. And then he found out, cause he was in the waiting room. And then I found out afterwards when I got home, like you can just imagine me with like clear braces being like, with, like, you know, smiling from ear to ear, being like,
do they tell you like someone's dropping out and they have a spot for you? You already gotten a no.
Well, I knew because that's why I was a little disappointed at first that I didn't book it, because I knew that they had found someone else. There were only a few slots, because there were five, one, two, three. Yeah, there were five young teenage male ensemble slots, tracks for the show. And I knew that I was not a part of that original bunch, but then one person backed down. So then I was like,
well, good for them. Bye.
But yeah, that was just getting that reaction with just me. Like, you can just picture like little Jess Soprato at like 16 years old with like braces galore. I had braces for 6 years.
Oh,
6 years.
Well, your teeth are great now. It all worked out. So you became pretty close with John Stamos, who is the star of that Bye Bye Birdie revival. How did that like friendship happen in a room full of, you know, teenagers that he probably wanted nothing to do with?
Well, again, he set the tone. It was amazing. Like, you know, when you have people who are that generous, I mean, like, it's just, you know, they set the tone right away and they're amazing at first. I mean, like, I remember one of the first really true moments that he was just like a generous human being was because he was playing for the Beach Boys. He plays for the Beach Boys occasionally here and there.
Oh, I remember that episode of Full House.
Yeah. So he was playing a gig in Ocean Grove. Yeah. Down the shore, down the Jersey Shore. And because my parents also have a summer home in Belmar. So that was like, okay, well, it's gonna be nice. Cause we can go down to the beach and then we can go see the show. And it was amazing. And then there was a bunch of us from the show as well. And then we all got to go on stage and sing Barbara Ann, which was amazing. It was just like, this is hilarious in and of itself. I mean, like, and like in this huge, like, it wasn't a stadium. It was like this huge, like, venue. It was like 3,000. It was a huge place. But yeah, it was a blast. It was truly a blast. And John set the tone, not just him. I really, you know, linked up and really kind of clicked with Bill Irwin. Bill Irwin was my guy. He was the best.
It's so interesting. I've talked to a few of you Birdie kids and you all have that same experience with Bill Irwin. It's so interesting. Why do you think he like took an interest in making sure you all had a good experience?
Well, because, you know, he is really a true theater, you know, he's just a true artist in that self. And he knows all of us are young, but he knows all of us have great potential. And I think he saw that in each and every one of us. And then for me personally, I remember I did one of my very first, like, it was a very, like, a benefit that he asked me to do. And it was me and Bill. We were dressed completely identically. Like, it was just like, and his garb, it's like, cause he was Mr. Noodle. So it looked like Mr. Noodle garb. Yeah. It was like long vest, long baggy pants, big glasses, bow tie, everything galore. So, but it was at La Mama Theater down in the Village. And it was my first time at La Mama down in the Village. It was my first time taking a train, a subway down anywhere in New York. And, you know, he really took an interest in just like, you know, building more than what was, you know, already we were already used to, you know, during the show. And it was amazing just learning from him. And just because I love physical humor, I love physical comedy, and he's one of the kings of physical comedy today. So learning from him about pantomime and, you know, slapstick and physical comedy, like it was, and he did all that in the show too. So watching him was just a masterclass as well. So it was awesome.
So Buy Your Birdie wasn't received extremely well by critics and some audiences. How you're laughing, but now I want to know, like, how did that affect the teenagers? Obviously it affects adults a little different than it's going to affect the teenage ensemble. Were right. You like hearing that noise or you're laughing? It's so funny to watch you laugh. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to start with the review that kind of sets it up perfectly. We came back, we had our opening night party at the Hard Rock Cafe, and then we went back home, and then my parents pulled up a review from the New York Times, and of course Ben Brantley was the critic. And I'll just kind of paraphrase a little bit. The review included, "Please don't send any get well cards to anyone at the Henry Miller Theater. No, it is not the case of swine flu. It is the case of the following: tin ear, loss of comic timing, and the ability to make the audience think to themselves, where am I and what am I doing?" Like, and I was reading this aloud and I was just kind of like, and like, cause I was 16, I didn't really understand any of this jibber jabber that they kind of eloquently try to put in the New York Times review. So I was like, so what does this mean? Is this like good?
Is this good? Are we hit? You weren't.
No, we weren't. We were far from it. We were supposed to do a lot of different things. I think the show was supposed to extend through the spring. And then when that review came out, I think it, because remember, before we extended to the spring, the closing performance was January 24th. And then they extended us. They were like, you know what? We're going to extend to April. And this was before opening night.
Yeah.
We're going to extend to April. We're going to go on The View. We're going to do all this fun press stuff. And then that review came, opening night came. It was like a bomb. It was not good.
So you weren't expecting it. You weren't like, this is going to be a hot hit. Like,
I mean, there was a little bit of things that kind of trickled into there. They're like, okay, some things are definitely going to be flawed that we probably just can't fix in time. But yeah. And like, there were some particular, you know, figures in the production that probably, you know, were cause of that, mm-hmm. be it, you know, on stage or behind it. I think egos got in the way. I think, you know, just in the sense of, you know, stress and trying to figure out how to fix things didn't really come as quickly as everyone wanted them to. Because I grew up with the movie. So that was just a fun experience just to do something that I grew up watching the movie and then doing it on stage.
I mean, and you kids were great. Like, you killed it. It was so fun to watch that sort of energy and spirit. And that was a joy. No matter
what. My mother was biased. She said, "You guys were the best part in the whole show."
Jess, we have to talk about Pace and So You Think You Can Dance and Newsies and Hello Dolly and all the things. So we're going to take a little tiny break and come back with Jess Liprato.
Yes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, we are back with Jess Liprato. We are talking, we just finished wrapping up talking about Bye Bye Birdie, the Broadway revival. Talk to me about So You Think You Can Dance. Did that happen right after you graduated high school?
Well, no, actually, it started November 2010. So I was a senior in high school.
Okay.
That was my very first audition. And I was 18. I went to BAM in Brooklyn. And that was when they were having the open, you know, the city tryouts auditions. I only went to like four. It's Brooklyn, LA, somewhere, I think somewhere definitely down south and somewhere in the Midwest area. Or Atlanta. I think they went to Atlanta as well. So I went to Brooklyn and that was my first time. And like a lot of people don't, maybe a lot of people don't know, but there are a few other rounds that you have to go through before you actually see what's normally shown on camera when the show premieres every year. There are a couple rounds and those rounds include one, the very first, and they're improv rounds. So you have to improv. And normally you have to go, and like when you see the episodes, like they have like prepared pieces, solos and stuff to show to the judges to see if they get through. But these first two rounds were improv. And I remember this, Jeff Thacker, who was a senior producer of the show, I think he still recalls this as probably one of the craziest, you know, probably the most stressful for any dancer to be called upon. So they put us into groups. I was in one group and I improvised for my little moment. And then he brought me back out. He said, okay, we're just going to improvise for like, we're going to put some songs on. He put on All That Jazz. He put on Fear You Won't Fall, which is like more of a contemporary thing. I think he put like a Bollywood, and then he put Lady Gaga on, and then he put the So You Think You Can Dance theme on. And then he waved a ticket, and the ticket would indicate that you would get through to the next improv round. And I was so excited. I slid to him. And I was like, give me that ticket. And I just waved it up in the air, and he said, good, give that to the person next to you.
Oh, shit.
So I was still, and I had like fingerless gloves. I thought I was really like hip at the time. I had fingerless gloves and I threw them off. And then he continued. And then he continued to give everyone tickets who were going to the next round. And I still was ticketless. So I was like, oh boy, what did I do? And then he said, thank you very much. And then I just kind of like, you know, with my tail between my legs, go and pick up my fingerless gloves, go pick up my backpack. And then he said, excuse me, because I was like number three. He was not named. And he was just like, excuse me, number three, you seem to have dropped your ticket. Would you like another one? I was like, oh, boy. What did I get myself into? And then it was not the same. We did an improv the next day in front of the judges. And then I did my solo. And then I had to go through choreography. And then I got the ticket to go to Vegas. So right in the beginning, that just introduced everything to me as to what this journey was going to be like. And it was going to be something I had never experienced up to that point. I mean, like I was a competitive dancer who grew up on the competition circuit and, you know, and that's already stressful enough, but this is the next level up. It's probably like 10 levels up as far as like stress, intensity, anxiety, like, and when we got to Vegas, it was anxiety galore. It was
just
crazy.
Your senior year of high school. So are you just like peeking out on high school so you can be like, you know, turning triple turns in Vegas, like a showgirl? Yeah,
Vegas week was like in the middle, it was like April. And then so I took a week off. And Vegas week is another thing where I was like, I was stressed out of my mind, and then hip hop came, and hip hop at the time was not my strong suit. And then it was a nappy tabs combination. My partner accidentally kicked me in the eye, and I had to go sit down and injure. Meanwhile, there's a cameraman and a producer being like, so how do you feel, Jess? How do you feel? What's going on? What's going through your mind? What's going through your mind? So I'm like, uh-oh.
Have you watched any of those performances recently? You're so good. It's wild.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I watch them. Sure, I watch them. I mean, like, because I've had to put like business reels and things together. Yeah. So I see them because I would like to include them because it's such a unique opportunity and it's such a unique thing that I got to do.
And you made it very far in the show. It's not like you were eliminated right away.
No, I made it. I made it through the top 10, which was the goal to make
amazing.
It to the top 10. And then I made it another week. I made it to top 8.
All right.
Each choreographer, I had Stacey Tukey, I think, two times. I had Thijs DeOrio, Jean-Marc Jeanrot, Tony and Melanie, Justin Giles. These were all duets. And then the groups that I had. Oh, I also had Nappy Tabs for a duet. I had Jason Gilkinson. Sorry about Jason, not about Jason Gilkinson, but about the number that he'd set on me. It was a rumba to Set Fire to the Rain by Adele. And that was the last like competitive duet that I did on the show before I got eliminated. So anytime that I hear Set Fire to the Rain, I'm like, oh, that's my swan song.
That's the end. What did you learn from that experience? If you kind of look back at it?
Well, I mean, well, one thing for sure is that I was super, super young. I was only 18. I was the ripe old age of 18, which is the first year of eligibility for anybody to try out for the show. So that environment and that kind of pulsating thing every week, it takes a toll on someone, you know, at that young age. If I was a little older, maybe it probably wouldn't have been as, you know, I probably would have been able to kind of have a more of like self-confidence in that sense. But because I was so young, you know, I felt that I was second guessing a lot of times. I was psyching myself out. I was in my own head. So the moral of it was just like, you know, don't second guess it. I mean, I think when I eventually got on stage and I did it and I did every number leading up to it, it all kind of came together at the very, very end because I just kind of let go of everything. So basically everything that I learned was in the rehearsal studio, but then knowing how to throw it away, not be so focused on it, and then just enjoy it, because that's what's going to come transfer through the television screen for people who are watching.
I mean, it's such good training. Like, what a cool experience. Which sort of brings us to this. I'm kind of shocked you went to college, because it just seemed like things were going okay without it. So how hard of a decision was it to be like, oh, I'm going to go to school for, you know, theater?
Well, I mean, like, I knew that at some case, if So You Think You Can Dance didn't work out that summer, that I would definitely apply. You know, I was still auditioning for schools. Like, senior year was a crazy, crazy year. So I was trying out for So You Think You Can Dance. I was trying out for any and every program in the tri-state area for musical theater, whether it be Juilliard, NYU, NYU Tisch, SUNY Purchase, Pace, which I went to, Montclair State, like, all these schools. So I was just trying out for anything and everything, just be like, listen, I am malleable. I can be fixed. I'm a work in progress. So, but like, Pace seemed to be like the right fix, the right fit for me.
Does it feel strange to be in a college program when you have like 3 Broadway credits and you've been on TV dancing and now you're sitting next to Stacey Abrams? That's not a good name. Stacey Jellison from Iowa, who thinks she's really rocking and rolling.
Well, because I was supposed to go, my first year was supposed to be the fall of 2011. But what happened was I booked Newsies. That's the winter spring of 2012. So that wasn't going to work out.
Go to school. I'm in a
block. No, but then also in the fall of 2011, I was on tour with So You Think You Could Dance. So the fall and the spring were just, it was too crowded of a space, and that was not going to happen. So I enrolled the fall of 2012. And when I got there in 2012, I remember there's one instance where I was talking to my mom. I was coming from like a class or something like that. It was a dance class. And I see this freshman come running past me, and she's on the phone with her mom. She's just bawling, and she's just bawling at the phone. In the phone, she's like, "It was awful. It was awful. I got screamed at. I want to go home." I'm like, "What did I sign up for? What's going on here?"
So let's talk about Newsies, because you have so many stories. But so you're in Newsies on Broadway, the original cast. You play Buttons and Scab, are your character names? Yes.
Yeah.
You need to adopt 2 dogs and name them Buttons and Scab. Did you do it at Paper Mill as well?
I did not. This is during that crazy senior year.
Yeah.
I tried out for Newsies for Paper Mill during my senior year, and I originally booked it. And then I held on to that offer during the first couple few weeks of So You Think You Could Dance. And then when I made it to the top 10 and when they announced that we were going on tour, that I wasn't able to commit to it because I knew that the tour was going to be a unique experience. Like, when do you get to go on as a dancer and be the headliner or a part of the group, the main group that people are going to see? So I couldn't do it at the time. But then I was like, did I screw up a chance? Because I knew that the show was transferring to Broadway. And then, so The Grinch, Bye Bye Birdie, and Newsies, all 3 shows that I would eventually wind up in, but never did the Thanksgiving Day Parade for any of them. Okay. So when I saw Newsies on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, I was like, and this was the cast that did it at Paper Mill. So I was like, oh boy, did I really screw up this? I don't know if I'm going to be able to audition for this again. But as luck would have it, they had auditions again, and then they were still interested. So I joined the original Broadway company in the transfer from Paper Mill to
Very cool.
Yeah.
How much did Chris Catelli set up choreography based on y'all's skills? Because I feel like you're doing things that like only you know how to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, he definitely catered to our strength as far as individuality. And then like, he knew how to kind of muster it all up for all of us to be a part as like a unison ensemble. a sound ensemble. But when it came to individual stuff, I remember there was a moment in King New York that did not exist at Paper Mill that included a section with spoons. So that was the one thing that was added to the Broadway production. And they knew that Evan and I could tap and we can do a fun moment. And I think I even said, yeah, on my special skills, and this goes to show you, put this on your special skills and put the stuff that you really know what to do because you never know when you're going to use them. I put that I play the spoons because I play the spoons. My dad plays the spoons. So I picked it up from him. So he saw that and he was like, oh, this could be a good idea. So then we show up for rehearsal for King New York and then we start working on the section. It was just like, amazing. So he knew that obviously we could tap and use our special skills to our advantage. And then the same thing with the curtain call. And I say this to everybody, whoever asks, what's the hardest part of the show? It was that damn curtain call. It was the curtain call because it was just so, because you just did 2.5 hours of amazing, amazing dance, athletic, joyous, incredible, you know, male, you know, a wonderful movement for dancers. Yeah. And then you do this curtain call. You're already gasping for air. And then you do this curtain call and you're like, oh, and then you have to do turn sections during the curtain call. And it was just like, wow. So that was the hardest thing to do. And on a steel deck too, on a steel deck.
Ugh, wild. And that fan reaction was so crazy from that show. And I'm sure that is like the gift that keeps on giving from people who know you and are obsessed with you from being part of that, you know, historic musical.
Oh yeah, like going back to the first preview, like the first preview was like a rock concert. It was crazy. And like the Nederlander Theater, which doesn't even seat 1,200 seats, like that theater was rocking that night. I was like, it was like a wall of sound. I've only heard that wall of sound a few times. And that's one of the few that I was just like, wow. That's a show also that shows how powerful the show is, but also how powerful the audience was to convince, you know, Disney in some case to really take this seriously, because there is a following here. So I think they knew that, and they knew that there was something special that was unique from any other show that they had ever produced, and it wind up being what it set out to be and continues to be.
So cool. And you kind of now are just hopping from Broadway show to Broadway show, kind of following Newsies, right?
Yeah.
So you go to On the Town, which is this huge show back at the Hilton Garden Magic Theater that changes its name every 5 minutes. What was it called then for On the Town?
It was the Lyric. Okay. On the Town was the Lyric. Great. So it was nostalgic also because that was the original name of the theater before they kept changing it to all these different names and such. So that was fun. And that was the first time that I got to, it was the first revival that I'd done since Bye Bye Birdie. So that was fun to kind of dive back into an older, you know, sensitivity and that kind of timing and that such. But it was great. And it was really the first time that I got to really showcase my character skills, because I got to do a lot of choreography from Josh Bagas in the dance ensemble, but I also got to do just as much character work that John Rando provided to the director. And I got to do it with probably the best group of character actors I ever got to work with, you know, in a show alone. That was Jackie Hoffman, Michael Rupert, Philip Boykin, Allison Gwynn, Steven DeRosa. It was like an A-list team of theater character actor stars. It was the best. And I got to kind of tag along with it. It was great.
And then Cats is, you left On the Town to do Cats, where you, in the original revival, where you play the role of Mungo Jerry. That must have been very exciting. Just like as a theater kid, I mean, was Cats anything to you?
Yes. And yeah. I grew up with that VHS. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember, like, I just remember watching that VHS over and over again. Like anything that I watched, I would watch on repeat. And I would just like anything that I didn't pick up lyrically, I would just kind of make up my own words. But it was nice to like actually learn the words of some.
Could you believe that you were there? Like, oh my God, I'm in a trash heap and I am playing Mungo Jerry and Cats. Like, look around. This is so wild.
Well, I mean, like, and also just the group of people that I grew up, that I already had shared and just, you know, had created experiences with from other shows. We were all doing this together, the first ever revival of the show. So it was a blast. And when you have Andy Blankenbuehler at the helm too, whichever none. Like they obviously wanted to keep the spirit, the original spirit of the show, but Andy wanted to spice it up. And I think that's what he really did. And I loved it. It's the hardest show that I've ever had to do. Even harder than Newsies.
Is it because it's physically more demanding?
Well, surprisingly, people don't realize that it is vocally demanding. Oh. It's vocally demanding. Like, those vocal lines are through the roof. And no wonder that they have to have six singers off stage, standing off stage, creating more support sound, because that they just need it. And then there's a lot of things that you can weigh you down, like, you know, we're wearing unitards, and like if you're sweating a lot, it starts to get a little chilly. You're wearing yak hair. I had to learn how to put makeup on, like real, like authentic, like really, like more professional makeup on myself, because people don't realize that we do it ourselves. There's not one makeup artist that does, you know,
all the cats meow
people.
All right. We have to talk about Hello Dolly, because it's been a huge part of your life, because not only were you part of this original revival, not original revival, but revival with Bette Midler, but then you also played Barnaby on the national tour with Betty Buckley. So I want to talk about Hello Dolly and what that experience was like doing that on Broadway with Bette.
Oh, I mean, this goes like, cause I was a part of the first like few like developmental stages of Dolly back. It was the summer of 2016. And then we opened in 2017. So that was the very first time that I got to see what they were all about. And it was my second time working with Jerry Zaks. I worked with Jerry Zaks in the out of town tryout for A Bronx Tale at Paper Mill Playhouse. And I loved him. I adored him. He's one of the best people that I've ever had to work with. I'll work with him any day. And I learned so much from him. So just through that developmental process and then working with Warren, again, Warren Carlyle, the choreographer. I mean, the team was just stacked. It was amazing when you have Scott Rudin as well. Like, it's good company. And then you have Bette and you have David, Gavin.
Wild.
It was just like amazing. I just enjoyed it. It was, again, it was one of those moments. It's one of those things. It was like The Boy from Oz. It was like a hot spot to be in the theater district. You had to go see it while Bette was in it, and like she just soared, and she was like a one woman hootenanny. She was like she was a riot, because anytime any show would be different, she never did the same show. Sometimes it would just be from just like, you know, forgetting something and just going with it, and the audience would just have their own special show. It was like Woodstock. That very first preview, it was like the invited dress set. I mean, again, it set the bar for what was about to happen during that run. And
do you have a favorite Bette memory?
Oh, I have too many. I have way too many. Well, I mean, like the first one, I have a good memory about the first rehearsal that we met her. It was like a company meeting. Jerry was obviously conducting it. And then Bette was like, I want to say something. So I'm like, okay, here we go. She said, listen, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to having other people to work with, you know, to perform side by side with. I'm normally doing this by myself. And I know all of you are much better singers than I am, much better dancers than I am, much better actors than I am, but I know none of you are as funny as I am. So, I mean, like, we were all just like laughing, because like we couldn't keep it straight.
She's right.
Yeah. I mean, like, she's right. Absolutely. And she's that kind of funny that is just off the cuff and raucous, which I think for that kind of show, like it was made for her. It was tailor-made for her. And the costumes, the sets, like that moment in time was such a wonderful space for all of us just to kind of just, and like, it was just a positive show. It was good timing too for that show.
Because was it hard for you to leave? Because you left to do Carousel before you went on tour with Hello Dolly, right?
Yeah.
Was it hard to leave that kind of atmosphere of working on the hottest, you know, ticket in New York?
Well, because I did the show for 10 months. I think that was a good place to kind of, because that was also when Bette left too. Mm-hmm. And I knew that Carousel.
You're like, I leave with Bette.
It said that in my contract. No, I'm kidding. No, but I knew that Carousel would offer something different, because I knew that choreography wise and dancing Hello Dolly a particular way was just a particular movement. But I knew that I wanted to change it up. And I knew that when the opportunity came up for Carousel, I was knocked down and I couldn't believe it. And again, I think at first I didn't book it. And then, you know, they came back and said, okay, yeah.
So absolutely. Wild.
I know. It was one of these weird, coincidental things, just kind of like they come out of thin air. And then I remember like they were kind enough to add a track for me. And it was just like, okay, I'm just going to go along with it, because they seem to be really making this work. And I'm just going to go for the ride. And again, that was another great group of people who set, you know, everything in place. Josh Henry, Jesse Mueller. Jesse Mueller is probably one of the most talented people I have ever come across and have ever worked with. She is a true chameleon. She can do anything.
100%. There's no one I'd rather see in a Broadway show. Oh, well, maybe, but I am obsessed with her.
Well, she can do anything. And then you have Lindsay Mendez, who knocked it out of the park. Alex Gimignani, Renee Fleming, like
wild. So cool to be part of that.
It was just great. And like Renee was amazing. Like we would do these like fun, like little scat videos with Josh and Renee. And like, I would be singing we would sing the same parts like Renee and I, cause I can sing falsetto for a lot of stuff. And then Renee and I would sing the same parts. I'm like, when am I going to say that I sang when I sang with Renee Fleming on the same vocal parts for a scat video?
Oh my God. It's so funny. And then you leave Carousel to do the national tour of Hello Dolly and Play Barnaby with Betty Buckley and kind of resetting that up. How many of you from Broadway went on the tour?
A few of us did. Quite a few of us did. Because you know, you want to have people who understand this particular production. And we were still in previews for Carousel when I was asked and invited to do the tour as Barnaby. So I was, and like, I'm worrying about what I have to remember for that evening's performance at Carousel. And then I just get this news and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. All right. All right. Well, we'll put this in the noggin. We'll put this in the back of the noggin and we'll see what happens. But
was it hard to do that with someone different after having this year with Bette Midler, essentially, to kind of start the show with a different energy and a different kind of, I mean, Betty Buckley's not known for her comedy. So, you know, it's a very different experience. And I'm a huge Betty Buckley fan, but I'm curious what that was like to be inside of both of those.
Well, I mean, like with Bette, anything was just like, you know, she'll do anything. She can do anything. And then I didn't do the show with Bernadette, but I know for Bernadette, for people who worked with her, it was just a different tone. But there's always something that like, if Bette didn't have one thing, Bernadette did. And like, it was just kind of like, that thing would stand out and that would be the strength of the show. That would be the thing that would carry the show forward. For Betty, who I adore, her thing that would be like so pinpoint that to the audience was her sentimentality, like her love and her emotion and her conviction in the material. And I think that came out the most during, any song before the parade passes by was such a huge moment, you know, for her in the show. And, you know, that's when she really put her heart and soul. I think she puts her heart and soul into everything, into the material as much. And then Jerry guided her along the way as far as her comedic timing with Lewis Stadlin, who played Horace Vandegelder as well. But I just adored her because, you know, for us, like you don't want to see the same show. You don't want to see every Dolly do it exactly the same. You want to see each one bring out something new in Dolly, to just give the audience something new to enjoy.
And how cool to play a principal role in a show that, you know, is huge and a big first national tour in many years of Dolly. So awesome. We have to touch on West Side Story before we get to Obsessed and quick fire questions. So what can we expect from West Side Story? When are we getting it? What can you tell us?
Well, it's definitely going to come out this year.
Okay.
Definitely coming out this
year. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you, well, because we were all curious as to whether the movie was going to come out last year or not, because it was slated to come out December 18th, which is Steven's birthday. Of last year, it was supposed
Steven
to come
Spielberg,
out.
Not
I anymore. Know it's a birthday present to himself. So we were all like, "Well, I mean, hopefully there's something to look forward to in 2020. Please let there be something to look forward to in 2020." But sadly, they knew that they want the cinematic experience, and I think knowing what we did, and I think because like Steven said, like we gave everything we got. We had to give to the show, to the movie, to the production. And I think that'll come across on screen. I know that from what I experienced, I think all of the top performers in the film are just top drawer. Rita Moreno, who, you know, again, is just, you know, someone who just blows it out of the water. And then you have Rachel Zegler, you have Mike Feist, Ariana DeBose. Like the company is stacked again. And like when you have the Jets and the Sharks, Jet Girls, Shark Girls, like the best of the best in the same pond, and you're just kind of like jamming it out and, you know, doing it and, you know, learning from each other, inspiring, you know, being inspired by one another. And it's going to sound amazing. There's a lot to kind of say, but I'm hesitant to say any more about it because I want to keep everyone engaged.
It's so wild to be, you know, a theater person and then all of a sudden be on a huge budget movie. Like, it just must feel like a different world.
Well, also because, like, when it came to scene work, dance was different because we had to rehearse it. But when it came to scene work, obviously you had to memorize your lines, but there was never any blocking or kind of anything ahead of time before a shoot day where you had to put, you know, do it on film, you would rehearse like a, maybe like a half hour before they would set up the shot, and then that would be it. So everything was a little bit more, I wouldn't say last minute, but it was definitely on the day of. And like, that was the emotion I think that Steven was looking for. Nothing that would be too prepared in that sense, because he would give the direction, because he knows what will be conveyed properly. And, you know, that will be, you know, conveyed to the audience through the lens. Yeah. And that will be connected and translated to the audience in the theater too.
Well, we can't wait for it. Jess, you are also one of the best teachers I've ever worked with. So, I mean, is there like a real sense that you would like to be choreographing and directing? Because I feel like that must be where we're going.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The dream is really to do a Tommy tune and to do my own thing while still be able to, you know, perform it.
All right. Well, we want that. Okay. I need to know what you're obsessed with, and then we'll do quick fire. So what is your obsession this week, Jess Librato?
You know what? I just got into Jacob Collier, the artist.
All right.
So I'm listening to all of his stuff, all of his music, and I'm just like floored right. Because it's he writes a lot of original music, but he does a lot of covers, and his arrangements are through the roof. And I enjoy I just started listening to it last week, so I'm just like hooked on that for sure. Right,
Jacob Collier. My obsession this week is a TV show called Alone Together on Hulu. It stars Esther Pavinsky. Do you know what the show is?
No.
It's so weird and so funny. It's very, very strange, but check it out on Hulu. They're really great, fun 22-minute episodes, and I laugh very hard at it. So check it out. Alone Together. All right, here we go. Broadway Workshop quick fire questions with Jess Librato. This is a series of questions put together by myself and students at Broadway Workshop. So here we go. First audition song.
Ooh. All I Need Is a Girl.
Favorite holiday.
Christmas.
First Broadway show you saw.
The Lion King.
Have you ever turned down a Broadway offer?
Yes.
Great. One thing about working with Jessie Mueller.
Oh, she's the best, like a chameleon.
Fill in the blank. Steven Spielberg is
the bomb.
If you can go back and do one performance of anything in your career, what would it be?
Ooh. I would relive The Boy from Oz again.
What do you want on your bagel?
I want butter.
I think I know the answer to this, but who's your favorite Dolly?
I can't pick a favorite.
Okay, it's Bette Midler. Strangest fan reaction.
Oh,
strange. Or interaction is probably.
Well, I mean, like at Newsies and at Cats, anyone who is dressed up in the attire that you just wore on stage for 2.5 hours and you get to see them in person, I'm like, well, I mean, like, kudos for you, but it was definitely, you know, taken back by
also
it.
Very strange. Go to album for a car trip.
Ooh. Everyday Rapture.
Have you ever called out mid-show?
I have never had to call out mid-show.
Wonderful. Worst audition you can remember?
I remember going in for Gypsy for the Patti LuPone revival, and I was singing, and Arthur Lawrence was behind the table, and I was singing so loud that I think he had to plug his ears.
Who is your number one favorite Broadway leading lady?
Ooh, I'm going to say Jessie Mueller again.
I want blank movie to be a musical.
Ooh, Lean on Me.
Love that. Okay, what cat should Patti LuPone play in Cats, not Grisabella?
Wait, say that again?
You have to cast Patti LuPone as one cat, but it's not Grisabella.
I would cast her as Jenny Anydots.
Can you name two Real Housewives?
Well, I mean, I'm from New Jersey. So that's Teresa and what's her face? Dolores.
Great. Do you know Dolores? There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever
auditioned? Family tree.
Oh my God. I want to know more about that. Have you ever auditioned for Bach?
Yes.
Okay. If you can choreograph the revival of any show, what would it be?
Ooh, Footloose and Company. Yeah.
Name a musical you're okay with never seeing again.
I would say Mamma Mia.
And that's okay. You're allowed. And if you could go back in time and see any Broadway show, any year, any show, what would it be?
Well, I think probably that groundbreaking production of West Side, 1957. Ooh.
Who makes you starstruck?
Billy Joel.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
What is your Starbucks order?
It is a grande. It's a grande tea.
All right. Mm-hmm. So British of you. What movie can you watch over and over?
Sing in the Rain.
And my last question, what advice do you have for young dancers?
Do your research. Do your research, because YouTube is a great tool. Use it, because it's not just for cat videos. There's a lot more out there than you know.
Great. So, do your research.
It's an archival, you know, place where there's, you know, amazing footage of anything. Dance, music, acting, creatively, any designing things too. Like, that is the place. Like, that is the do-it-yourself place over there, page over there.
Jess Loprato, we're obsessed with you at Broadway Workshop. I just think the world of you as a performer and as a person. So thank you so much for joining me today. Tell the people where they can find you and follow you and what's going on with Jess Loprato.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at jloprato_official. You can also find me on YouTube under Jess Loprato, Facebook under Jess Loprato, Twitter. My handle is at DHS, which I've had since So You Think You Dance.
Great.
So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Well, everybody follow Jess Loprato. Jess, thank you for being with me today. I had so much fun chatting with you.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. And if you're loving the Little Me podcast, remember to rate and review and subscribe over at Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Instagram at Little Me Podcast. And we will see you next week. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners. This podcast is produced by Alan Seals, Dori Berenstein, and the Broadway Podcast Network, and edited by Derek Gunther. For more information on the Little Me podcast, go to bpn.fm/littleme. And follow me on Instagram at Mark Tuminelli or on Twitter at ThatTuminelli. And for more information on workshops, classes, and everything Broadway Workshop, go to BroadwayWorkshop.com. Thank you for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.